This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
We'll be releasing that partial transcript tomorrow. Well, what we're not going to do is further proclaim this individual's pledges of allegiance to terrorist groups and further his propaganda. We're trying not to re-victimize those who went through that horror. The reason why we're going to limit these transcripts is to avoid re-victimizing those who went through this horror. It's our goal to be as transparent as possible in this investigation.
What a difference a day makes. That's Attorney General Loretta Lynch, which some people are referring to as the Minister of Information, the title given someone in a totalitarian state for managing information, because just the next day, suddenly the FBI, the Justice Department, decide to release the transcripts of Omar Mateen's conversations with police as he is killing brutally nearly 50 people in that Orlando nightclub. And so they released the transcripts, sort of. But Sebastian Gorka didn't think they were quite as thorough as they might have been. Let's listen.
When you are a jihadi, you don't use the word God. What was he witnessed shouting in the nightclub as he was mowing down his fellow Americans? He wasn't shouting, God is the greatest in English. He was shouting, Allahu Akbar. So the idea that suddenly he translates it into English for the dispatcher is absurd. We won us a really significant victory today, Sean. Common sense won a victory against the political narrative of the DOJ, but they're still trying to fleece us. They're still conning us by saying he said God. He didn't say God to the dispatcher. He clearly said Allah.
All right, that was Sebastian Gorka, courtesy of Fox News. And by the way, this is Sandy Rios. I know, they said it was Tony Perkins, and it turns out to be me, but I'm filling in for Tony today, who has been in New York all day with a group of evangelicals meeting with Donald Trump. And at the end of the show today, toward the end in the last segment, Tony, who is, again, the host of this show every day, is going to join us and tell us firsthand what that meeting was like and what transpired. So I hope you'll stay tuned. Well, this whole business of scrubbing words out of this transcript and then adding them back, kind of, is a much larger issue than I think most people understand. But my next guest understands fully, and we're going to talk about it. Frank Gaffney is the founder and president of the Center for Security Policy, here in Washington, D.C., and on many of the hit lists for the jihadists. Frank, it's always a pleasure to have you join me.
Thank you, Sandy. It's good to be with you.
Hey, are you satisfied with the transcript that they released in its form? And as you guys looked at that, what were your thoughts about it?
Well, starting with what they tried to do, which is to redact statements that made perfectly clear what this jihadist was doing and why he was doing it, and in furtherance of what agenda he was doing it, and who he swore loyalty to, and on and on. In other words, they tried to obscure the information that anyone with a lick of sense, let alone somebody who would be making a case against a perpetrator, would recognize was absolutely dispositive with respect to motive, with respect to the nature of the individual, for that matter. And these are, of course, things that, Sandy, we've seen the government go to great lengths to try to obscure, the government and the press, to be fair, to obscure from all of us ever since this attack was underway. And it is a travesty. And that's what strikes me most about this particular episode, is it is a sort of case study of how we are being lied to. And I use that term advisedly, and have been basically since 9/11, about what we're up against and what we're going to have to understand if we're to prevail.
But now, Frank, when Donald Trump went after Barack Obama after the attack in Orlando, and rightfully pointing out that he never says Islamic terror, he came out in a press conference very angry, and he said, no, I don't ever, you know, why should I, what difference does it make? Everybody knows what this is, and why should I use those words? Because obviously an inference is that words don't really matter. We all know what's going on, but the truth of the matter is it's words they have been purging, right?
Right. Sandy, you know this subject very well. does remind me of Hillary Clinton's petulant comment in the Benghazi hearings. What difference does it really make?
What difference it really makes is that
if you want people like law enforcement personnel or military personnel or intelligence personnel or Department of Homeland Security personnel, not just to try to mop up after the next horrible attack takes place, but to prevent the next horrible attack. And then, by the way, it will likely be much worse in the future than what we've seen to date. If you want them to prevent that, you want them to understand what to look for. And if you're not only hindering their ability to know what to look for in the way of the kind of people who might engage in this, where you might find them, what kinds of telltale behavior do they engage in? What kinds of things do they subscribe to? How do they conduct themselves? I mean, those are the sorts of things that, good law enforcement, good intelligence analysis, good national security policy builds into the system. And far from, it's not just a question of hindering that. We have our personnel on notice that it is a career-ending offense to do any of that kind of dot connecting. So that's where we are. It makes all the difference in the world if you want to actually survive what the jihadists have in mind for us, because we will not if we can't stop them before they kill a bunch of us.
Frank, I'm going to abbreviate a lot of the things that are each worthy of an hour, but because I want to get to this new report that just came out. But could I just say, for those of you listening who may not know this, all of our materials to train our FBI, our Department of Justice, our CIA have been scrubbed, and they've been scrubbed with the cooperation of operatives from the Muslim Brotherhood through CARE, the Council of American Islamic Relations, which is an unindicted co-conspirator in the Holy Land Trial Foundation, and they now have found their way at the highest levels of Homeland Security, of the executive branch. They are deeply infiltrated into the Republican Party. And it's a very dangerous situation. It's all an effort, an international effort, to shut up any criticism of the Prophet, which sounds so strange to our ears, Frank, but it's true. In fact, if you could briefly just talk about that resolution in the UN that addresses this that Hillary Clinton is promoting.
Yeah, again, this is just one microcosmic example, Sandy, but it is an important one. One of the first things the Obama administration did when it took office in 2009 was agreed to a resolution that was put forward by basically the Muslim Brotherhood's international apparatus. This is called the Organization of Islamic Cooperation. And it was designed to try to get every nation to prohibit expression that offended Muslims and to criminalize it. The United States government co-sponsored that resolution and subsequently helped get it adopted. And subsequently, in July of 2011, Hillary Clinton, then the Secretary of State, now the presumptive nominee of the Democratic Party, essentially pledged that she would try to enforce that obligation, even in the face of the clear affront that it represents to the First Amendment to the Constitution and freedom of speech. It's guaranteed. She said, we're going to use old-fashioned, quote, techniques of shaming and peer pressure, unquote, to basically discourage that we abhor. And so you have, at the highest levels of this government, and I think the same is true of the President of the United States, unfortunately, Barack Obama, an intention to help our enemies keep us stupid about the threats we're facing. And the latest, Sandy, as you know, is just the past couple of weeks, an advisory committee to the Department of Homeland Security said, you know, you shouldn't allow anyone to use words like Sharia and jihad to talk about the threats we're facing. Well, those are so crucial. Those are so absolutely at the core of the danger that stripping them out is to assure again that we will not have our first lines of defense able to protect us.
All right, Frank, and In the few minutes that we have left, a report just came out after Orlando. This has come out just in the last, I think, 24 hours, 48. The Islamophobia report published by the Council for American Islamic Relations, which is the PR arm, I believe it's not, it's fair to say, of the Muslim Brotherhood. Again, CARE is an unindicted co-conspirator. They are linked directly to the Muslim Brotherhood by documents out of that trial. It's not speculation. And so tell us, as you can, in brief, what this Islamophobia report is all about.
It's actually worse than what you'd suggested, Sandy. That trial, the Holy Land Foundation trial, demonstrated they were actually started by Hamas, a terrorist organization, to raise funds for them and to do political warfare. This report is an example of it. It is designed to try to do what we were just talking about, suppress freedom of speech of those of us who don't have an irrational fear of Islam. We are objectively analyzing the threat that some, not all Muslims, but some Muslims pose to us because they subscribe to Sharia and they believe it's God's will that they use jihad to impose it on all the rest of us. They want us silenced. They probably want us dead, frankly, and I think that's part of the project here, to be honest with you, is painting bullseyes on those of us who have believed it our duty to our country and to the cause of freedom to stand up against the Sharia adherent jihadists.
Well, I should say, to be specific, they list, they name names, and they list lists. And the American Family Association is listed. So is your organization, Center for Security Policy. Frank, I haven't read it enough. You're probably mentioned in there too, with a target on your back. And of course, they're prescribing more of the same to help us to think properly about Islam and to treat those of us that are concerned about Sharia, the teachings of Sharia, as though we were like the Ku Klux Klan. They'd make that direct comparison.
They do. And Nazis. And Sandy, people in this country have enough common sense to know where this is headed, I think, if they just look at the facts. And you don't need to look at much more than what's happening in Europe to see where this leads.
Frank, I know you have some great resources. And so because you and I can only talk about bits of everything, where can people get more information from the Center for Security Policy?
Let me give you two sites, if I may. Ours is securefreedom.org. Another terrific site that we're helping with is called counterjihad.com. You can find out how you can help wage the counterjihad.
Yeah, let me repeat that because we're losing you just a little bit. It's counterjihad.com, counterjihad.com, or securefreedom.org. Both of those, great information. To help you equip yourselves and to pass on to your friends and help them understand. This national strategy, by the way, was part of it was written by Hatim Bazian, the director of Islamophobia Research and Documentation at UC Berkeley Center for Race and Gender. He has such a history of Islamophobia, of hatred of Jews, out of his own words, and violence, advocating violence. It's just amazing to me.
Rapid anti-Semitism, I think, is a fair way of putting it.
Rabid anti-Semitism. Thank you very much, Frank. Frank Gaffney, Center for Security Policy. Again, it's Countering Jihad or securefreedom.org for more information. Thank you, Frank. This is Sandy Rios filling in for Tony Perkins of Washington Watch. We'll be right back in a minute with something that's happening in the military, yet another attack on a patriot. It is unbelievable. Stay tuned.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. One of the places we'll visit on our spiritual heritage tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon is the United States Marine Corps Memorial, also known as the Iwo Jima Memorial, built in 1954 and the largest bronze statue in the world. Stephen McDowell, who's the president of the Providence Foundation, a historian, will join us all along the way, answer questions, talk about the people, the places, and the events in our nation's capital, and then on to Mount Vernon, the home of George Washington. In addition, we'll go to Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown for those who want to join us for this separate trip, which just precedes the Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon tour. For all the information on either of these tours, just visit us on the website, spiritualheritagetours.com. Again, this is in September. go to the website spiritualheritagetours.com.
More than a million believers have signed the pledge to boycott Target, and we urge you to join them. The American Family Association opposes the policy of Target allowing transgenders into the bathroom of their choice. Here's AFA President Tim Wildman.
There's a reason why we've had male and female separation in restrooms and fitting rooms for all of mankind's history.
A policy which allows men into women's restrooms and fitting rooms is not right, nor is it safe.
I think the human resources departments of these major corporations are the tail wagging the dog, because I just can't see corporate executives at Target or anywhere else sitting around a table going, you know, guys, I think we need to open up our women's restrooms for men.
Visit AFA.net to learn more and sign the pledge to boycott Target. Don't spend your money at Target until they stop putting our family members at risk with this dangerous, politically correct policy. That's AFA.net.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger. A group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org. healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
Islam is not part of the problem in combating violent extremism. It is an important part of promoting peace. Our enemies respect no religious freedom. Al-Qaeda's cause is not Islam. It's a gross distortion of Islam.
The future must not belong to those who slander the Prophet of Islam.
ISIL is not Islamic. No religion condones the killing of innocents, and the vast majority of ISIL's victims have been Muslim.
We have reaffirmed again and again that the United States is not and never will be at war with Islam. Islam teaches peace.
That's the President of the United States carrying on the propaganda business, and so he's been doing for the last 8 years. Meanwhile, behind the scenes, scrubbing the training manuals for all of our defense forces, for our FBI. No wonder the FBI director didn't know why, couldn't understand why the Orlando killer was citing three different terrorist organizations who he thought were at odds with each other, which they are, except when they're all hating us, because they're at the core of their teaching, all three of them, is Sharia law. But he doesn't understand that because he himself doesn't know. And you know, this is leaving our soldiers who are on the front lines in a terrible position because they're caught up in a battle in the Middle East that they can't even fully fight. Daniel Horowitz has a great article about that called The Soldiers We Left Behind, Special Operators in an Afghanistan Meat Grinder. And he talks about the rules of engagement, that there are so few of them, the danger that they've been placed in. And yet, in spite of that, and in addition to that, our soldiers, our Air Force, our military men and women are being put in an untenable position as they do their best to serve their country. Michael Berry has joined us. He's the Director of Military Affairs for First Liberty Institute. And by the way, yes, this is Washington Watch. This is Sandy Rios. I host the morning show for American Family Radio. I work here in Washington as the Director of Governmental Affairs for AFA. And so that's the unfamiliar voice that you're listening to right now. Michael Berry is joining us because there is now yet another example of one of our military veteran, one of our military heroes, he's an active duty officer, being absolutely humiliated because of his faith in God. And so, Michael, good afternoon. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Sandy. Thanks. It's great to be with you.
It's great to have you with me. All right, we have a job here, and that is to tell this story as clearly as we can. Tell us what has happened to Oscar Rodriguez, who is a 30-plus year veteran, decorated veteran of the Air Force. What happened to him in April?
Well, it's probably helps to back up just a little bit. Oscar has a history and tradition of giving very stirring and patriotic flag-folding speeches at various military events and community events around the Travis Air Force Base area, which is in California. He's done this over 100 times at things like the California State Fair, at baseball games, at military events like retirement ceremonies and whatnot. And he's become kind of a little bit of a mini celebrity for doing this, and to the point where lots of retiring military folks seek him out and say, hey, I want you to do the flag folding speech. And in April, Chuck Roberson, Master Sergeant Chuck Roberson, was retiring from the Air Force, and he had seen Oscar do this about a month prior to somebody else's retirement, and he went to Oscar and said, it would mean so much to me to have you do the flag folding speech at my retirement. It would honor me, it would honor my family, and it would just be an honor to have you do that. So Oscar, of course, agreed to do that. Well, Chuck Roberson's commanding officer, Lieutenant Colonel Michael Savitsky, found out that Oscar was going to be doing this, and he tried to have Oscar banned from even participating or attending, and when he found out that he couldn't do that, he did what I guess would be the next best thing, which is when Oscar began giving the speech, he had members, or there were members of his command in uniform, who grabbed Oscar and forcibly dragged him out of the ceremony.
There's an actual video of this, Michael, that you guys make available at First Liberty Institute. It is absolutely unbelievable. This flag ceremony, I've seen it done before, and I can't even tell you where. It's absolutely beautiful. I don't know what the origin of it is, but it is very God-honoring. And so this guy, this Lieutenant Colonel Michael Savitsky, he's not even the commander of the base, is he? He's a Lieutenant Colonel, but he's not the chief commander. How did he have the authority to try to stop this?
Well, you hit the nail on the head, Sandy. He doesn't have the authority. He has, and really the only obligation and authority he has is to follow the law here. And that's the one thing he failed to do. And he's not... The guys that did this in the video who are in uniform, they're not MPs. They're not military law enforcement. They have no authority to grab a private citizen and drag him away and eventually have him kicked off of the base. And nor does their commander, Lieutenant Colonel Savitsky. He doesn't have the authority to issue an order for them to do that. So clearly, either he doesn't know the law, or, obviously as a lieutenant colonel, he's fairly senior. You'd think that he knows the law, and he just wantonly disregards it.
So the video is just stunning. So, is Mr. Rodriguez in active duty? I never saw his title. Is he in active duty?
No, he's retired.
He's retired. Okay. Decorated, over 30 years of service. So he's standing there, and he's in this big booming voice. He's giving this beautiful... at least we hear a little tiny bit of the presentation. And these guys literally go over and drag him out. And you know the thing I noticed, Michael, is, and he just keeps talking. He's fighting them, not literally fighting, but fighting being removed. And I'm surprised that none of the other men in the audience helped Mr. Rodriguez. That surprised me, too.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I actually spoke with Chuck Roberson, the retiring individual, about that. And I said, everybody just seems to be just watching this happen. I said, that strikes me as very unusual. And he said, he's played this event over and over in his mind. And he said, honestly, his best explanation is that they were frozen in disbelief and shock, that it just was so surreal that it was almost as if he was watching it in a movie and it couldn't believe this was happening. We were at First Liberty Institute. We represent Oscar, but I have to say that I really feel for Chuck Roberson as well. This is his retirement. This is supposed to be an event that honors him and his service. He served for 26 years, and what an embarrassment and a shame to have his retirement ceremony ruined in this way.
No kidding. First Liberty Institute has written a letter to the commanders demanding that they respond, or they're going to be. Brought under some kind of a suit. It's the First and Fourth and Fifth Amendment. And if you go to standwithoscar.com, you'll get more of the details. You can see the video, and you can do what you can to help this guy who served his country so faithfully. It is another shameful episode in the American military under President Barack Obama. Mike Berry of First Liberty, thank you so much, Michael, for telling us about this, and we'll see if we can do whatever we can to help Mr. Rodriguez and to help you succeed on his behalf. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Sandy.
All right, Sandy Rios, and this is Washington Watch for Tony Perkins.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Do I really want to manage my own portfolio? It's a great question, and it's one that we should be thinking about before we get into doing that. As you all know, I'm very concerned about all of us being biblically responsible, doing what is right with the money God has entrusted us, making sure that we're not investing because when we invest, we are taking ownership in companies, making sure that they are biblically responsible companies. In other words, they aren't involved in pornography or abortion or things that would be offensive to God. This is God's money. He has entrusted us to be a good steward of it, and we need to make sure we do that. So if you don't have the time to do the work in managing individual stocks, the best way to do that is mutual funds. But the only mutual funds you can use are the Timothy plans. They're the only true biblically responsible mutual fund company. They are evenly yoked with you and I and desire to make sure that the money that they're managing is being invested in things that are biblically responsible, that are honoring and would be pleasing to God. So if you're going to do the mutual fund route, the only way to do it is with Timothy Plan, timothyplan.com. Not because it is just easier, which it is, but because it's biblically responsible and it's the right thing to do in the eyes of God.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
This is one of the greatest abandonments of the American public by the political class and their media elite enablers that I've ever seen. They all know this is a terrorism issue. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to talk about their failures. It's an embarrassment to them. So they want to divert attention and say, hey, this is all gun control. It is tragic that we're not having a discussion right now of terrorism and how we protect this country, because they're coming and it's going to get worse and it's going to get worse, and we better prepare.
Wayne LaPierre, the head of the National Religious Broadcasters, National Rifle Association, not quite, commenting on how a terrorist attack in Orlando has been twisted. And we all know that, do we not? In two different ways. There is an attempt to make it seem as though, first of all, and I think from all reports, it had some success in the gay community to communicate that this is all about homophobia. It is Republicans who object to gay marriage. The New York Times said that it caused this attack. It's the hatred, the fomenting. I heard an entire response by the gay community just this past weekend talking about how we shouldn't blame it on Islam. Islam is a peaceful religion. This is all about a homophobia. And I also know of another broadcaster who went on the streets interviewing various gay activists on the street about after the attack in Orlando, asking them, do you think it's possible that Christians actually, like Chick-fil-A's out here, you know, feeding many of the gay activists and policemen for nothing, that it's possible that Christians could be against gay marriage and against homosexuality, but still not want anything to happen to you like this, no violence that might love you and might care about you and want to protect you from this? And the response, according to my friend, was no, they are our enemies. That, at least I'm sure some gay people don't feel that way, but the activists are hell-bent on that interpretation of what the line of, and so my friend's conclusion was that gay activists hate Christians more than they do members of Islam who practice Sharia, who throw gay men from tall buildings and believe in killing them. But the issue in Orlando wasn't Islam, was not homophobia. Certainly the teaching of Sharia law under Islam about killing homosexuals is part of their teaching. But the larger issue is that these were Americans in a Western nightclub, and they were, according to Sharia, you know, to be killed. I don't think he tried to convert them before he shot them, but they were to be killed, and this was his understanding. It is the understanding of Islamists around the world that they are to kill or convert, and mostly they kill, it seems to me. Then the other part is that they tried, the left and the media, and the president and the attorney general, when they were not saying or emphasizing the hate of it toward homosexuals, they were emphasizing the guns. And that's why Wayne LaPierre spoke as powerfully as he did. And as he said, as we are misguided, misled, lied to, training manuals scrubbed, soldiers, FBI agents, members of the military, unable, inept, ill-equipped to understand what the enemy really is, which is the teaching of Sharia, then we are in more and more danger, and this is going to happen more and more, and it is going to get worse and worse. It's funny, just a couple of stories, not funny, that is not funny, ironic would be the better word. Just a few stories I wanted to share with you. By the way, Tony Perkins will be joining us in a few minutes because he was in New York City at that meeting with evangelicals and Donald Trump today, and I'm certainly looking forward to hearing his opinion on what happened today, and we'll get to that in just a second. But as the freight train, you know, to take away Second Amendment rights, to ban AR-15 weapons, to call them assault weapons, to do whatever, to just do the same thing, fanning the flames of the rightful grief over the death of these people, these American citizens in Orlando, but using it as a way, as a tool to restrict the rights of Americans to defend themselves, the Second Amendment. There was a Missouri sheriff in Butler, Missouri. His name is Chad Anderson, Bates County Sheriff, and this is what he put on his Facebook page. In the wake of the continued attacks against Americans on American soil, the Bates County Sheriff is waiving the cost of the CCW permits for the rest of June. In other words, I think the fee is normally $100. In order to get your license, they're waiving the fee, and they're also giving free training. He said, I feel that I have a duty to protect the citizens while here in Bates County and allow them to be able to protect themselves and their loved ones while they are away. I will continue to pray for peace for our country and the world, but I will not put blinders on and act like this cannot happen here or to people we know and love. I want to say a big thank you to law enforcement and first responders community for what you are willing to sacrifice for our nation at home. And so this is how one sheriff is responding. You know, I happen to know that sheriffs around the country in many cases are better informed than the people here at a federal level, because there are still places to become informed about what Sharia law and radical Islam is, and some of them are availing themselves of that training. And so they're becoming local sheriffs, county sheriffs are becoming our first line of defense against whatever things we may face in the future. And I'm with Wayne LaPierre. I think there will be many. I think we're going to have to rise up to increase our own understanding and protect ourselves and our families. This is Sandy Rios. Again, I am the Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association, and I'm the host of the morning show for American Family Radio. And when we return, Tony Perkins will join us from New York City to tell us what happened today with Donald Trump. Sandy Rios, returning in a minute.
Does the U.S. Senate have a responsibility to confirm anyone that President Obama nominates to fill Justice Scalia's vacated seat? After the passing of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, an intense political debate has emerged around this crucial question. The Constitution does not require conditions or limitations on the manner in which the Senate must act if the president nominates. Family Research Council believes that the Senate should not consider or deliberate on any nominee President Obama puts forward to fill Justice Scalia's vacated seat. This is because the president has consistently nominated Supreme Court justices and federal judges who view the Constitution as a malleable political instrument instead of a text with a defined meaning based on the consensus held by the Founding Fathers. To learn more about this critical issue, including 8 helpful questions and answers, visit frc.org/Supreme Court. That's frc.org/Supreme Court.
A quick trip to Aunt Helen's unexpectedly became an extended stay, and you're without enough of your medication. It's good to know you have real-time access to a national network of board-certified doctors with just a phone call. MD Live is non-emergent medical care 24/7, fitting your schedule. No forms to fill out and no waiting room, because all you need is your non-narcotic medication. HCBenefits.com. That's HCBenefits.com.
You're a seasoned pastor, but you've always wanted more biblical and theological education. Hello, I'm John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary. Now is the time for you to apply for Master of Divinity Studies at Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. Biblical inerrancy and God's call to holy living are at the heart of our online learning. Our courses will give you the laser-like focus for pastoral ministry that you need. Wesley Biblical Seminary. Preach the word. Reach the world. WBS.edu.
Are you prepared to stand for real change? Mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C. Join thousands of like-minded Americans who envision a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers at the Values Voters Summit have included Senators Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, House Speaker Paul Ryan, Governor Mike Huckabee, Laura Ingraham, Kirk Cameron, Dr. Ben Carson, Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, Ollie North, Mark Levin, and many others. In addition, there will be ample opportunity to network and meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview and to discuss important issues like religious liberty, the sanctity of life, natural marriage, national security, government overreach, and more. On September 9th through 11th, stand with us and fight for the renewal of this great nation. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information and to watch last year's event. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. Filling in for Tony Perkins of Washington Watch. We're waiting for Tony to call in. He's in New York City. He's been there all day with nearly 1,000 evangelicals met with Donald Trump today, but there was also a smaller meeting, and I'm sure Tony was part of that. We'll talk to him in just a second. Now, interestingly enough, CNN, remember last week, right after the Orlando terror attacks, when Donald Trump was speaking so plainly about stopping Muslim immigration for a time until we could figure out how to vet people coming in from these terrorist torn areas, and he got such flap for that. And then in concurrence with that, they started reporting these polls talking about how Hillary Clinton was moving ahead and she seemed like such a reasonable person on this issue. And we were led to believe that people were upset with Donald Trump for saying these things about national security. But I have to say, polls are always slow. You know, they're not conducted like the night before. Those polls that were being reported in conjunction with that terrorist attack were polls that were taken before the attack. It's interesting to me that CNN has come out with a poll today showing that Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton tops Donald Trump only by 5%, according to this poll. That's almost within the margin of error. And so things have changed considerably. Also, I think all of you have heard that there was a man, an illegal immigrant in the United States living in his car. He was from Great Britain. He drove out to California, did a little gun training, and tried to kill Donald Trump just a few days ago. And so there's not much being said about that right now, but I think it's important that you know that because I think under normal circumstances, much would be made of that, but not much is being made of that right now. And speaking of Donald Trump, almost 1,000 evangelical leaders met with him in New York City just today. And a smaller group of them, a very small group, met with him privately. Tony Perkins, the host of this show, Washington Watch, and also the president of Family Research Council, was one of those people. He joins us now. Hi, Tony.
Hey, Sandy. How are you doing today?
Very well. Very well. I'm so glad we were able to talk to you. So I'm going to start with some basic journalistic questions, like who, what, when, where, and why. Who was at this meeting?
Well, this is a meeting of evangelical leaders from across the country. It's something I talked about this yesterday on the program. By the way, thanks for filling in for me today. I just left the NBC studio and heading over later tonight to be on Fox with Megyn Kelly to talk about this, which I think was, you know, a historic meeting. I don't know how long it's been, if ever, you've had this many evangelical leaders come together. It was a sign of unity, but also a sign of desperation. I think what this is showing is that evangelicals, Christians, social conservatives, because there were conservative Catholics there as well, understand that our faith is under attack. Our freedom to live according to our beliefs is in jeopardy. And they're looking for help. And I think you have a lot that are undecided about what to do in this general election. And that's why we had planned originally to have maybe 400, maybe five at best. We had to turn people away. We had over 1,000 actually that came today. And
wow.
It all started with a conversation between me and Bill Dallas about this idea of pulling evangelical leaders together. And I think it was very successful. Donald Trump addressed a number of the issues. But I think probably the most significant thing, Sandy, is that he communicated very clearly that he understood the attack that evangelicals have been under when it comes to their faith. And I think there's not maybe an understanding between Donald Trump and evangelicals, but there is an identity. And what I mean by that is, you notice how he's been attacked. You were talking about it just a moment ago, because he's not politically correct. Well, I think evangelicals identify with that in this this age of political correctness on steroids that has been accelerated by Barack Obama and his administration. People are looking for space, for a safe space. And he said, look, I will protect your right to believe and live according to your beliefs. I think it was very significant.
I think it is, too. Was there anything in particular that you as a group, or you as the smaller group, communicated to him that you can tell us?
Well, I think the issue of religious liberty was at the forefront of the discussion. Now, there were questions solicited from not only people there in the meeting, but people, Christians across the country, and we had over 50,000 questions. We, you know, categorized them, distilled them down, and a lot of them were in reference to religious freedom. I asked him in particular about the military and the social engineering that Barack Obama has undertaken with our military and how it's put our military at risk and how we've lost religious freedom within the ranks. And, you know, that's something that's certainly a concern of mine and FRC and many, many Americans. And he acknowledged those threats. He also said that he, unlike the current administration, would listen to the input of the military experts, the generals, and not push out those who did not agree with his, you know, the political correct agenda as Barack Obama has done.
Tony, I've heard different different people say different things about their interactions with Donald Trump privately. Did you feel he was the same person privately that we see in these rallies, that we see on television, in these interviews? Was there anything markedly different about him in private?
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring that up, Sandy, because I've met with him before, so I've talked to him a number of times and been with him on different occasions. And so I went around kind of polling or just asking questions of those that were there, what they thought, their impressions. And one of the things that I heard frequently from those in attendance was, you know what, he's not the same as the media portrays him and as he comes across in these news clips. There was a sense of humility, likability, even teachability that people were attracted to. Now, look, I don't want to be, I don't want to mislead anybody. There's still a distance between Donald Trump and evangelicals. There was an acknowledgement at the very beginning. Look, we were going to have a discussion of theology. There's no question that we have differing views on faith and on Christianity. I mean, he is a Presbyterian. He stated some of his beliefs. You know, he's not been extremely active in his church. But what he said, which I think resonated with so many there today, was his understanding of the importance of the ability to practice your faith and live by your faith. And he said, I know you're under attack. It won't happen under my administration. And again, given what we've seen in the last 7.5 years, where evangelicals have been under constant attack and marginalization by the policies of Barack Obama. That is a message that gives hope to many evangelicals. And so I think this is the bottom line, Sandy. A conversation began today. This is part of a process. And I think you're going to see many people watching more closely his campaign. But here's what I hope comes out of this, is that he listens even more so to evangelical social conservative leaders and others that can give him input on policy. He doesn't, you know, he's not well studied in the policies. That's not what he's done in his adult life. And so he needs good people around him. So I'm hoping that there'll be those that come around him that can help him develop a more, stable, faith-friendly platform that in the end will, in fact, help America be great again.
Tony, you know that there's been a great division among Christians during this primary season and over the nomination of Donald Trump. And you and I both know people, we all do, everyone listening to me knows people who are polar opposites on this particular issue. And many of them in a quandary or even just decidedly never going to vote for Donald Trump. Do you sense that any minds were changed today as a result of this meeting?
Well, first off, most of the people that were in that room were undecided. They were not, there were some that came with the campaign that were already supporting Donald Trump. And there were none that were openly antagonistic and, saying that they would never vote for him, because that was not the process. That was not the purpose of this meeting. It was not to have a showdown or anything like that. It was literally a legitimate attempt to try to bridge the gap that exists between us. I do think, I know from conversations with people as I was leaving, that it was a good, productive meeting in which they're beginning to feel more comfortable, and I think that they feel that there's that they're hopeful they may be able to support him. I will tell you where I am at. I have not decided what I'm going to do. I'm not going to vote for Hillary Clinton. I'm going to vote for Donald Trump because that's going to be really the two options that we have. Now, will I actively support him and work for him, to help him? I don't know. That's yet to be decided. There's several factors to look at. But I think we need to be very prayerful going into this election. And really, again, there's two choices. There's Hillary Clinton and there's Donald Trump. We know what Hillary Clinton will do. We don't know exactly what Donald Trump will do, but we can help kind of shape a course forward.
Tony, when you open the phone lines or talk to people, the listeners at American Family Radio and Bot Radio Network, which is your coverage area and some other stations, if you have the experience that I do, the tempers really flare. And people say to me, people are actually quite upset with me when I say to them, as you just said, that the choice today is a new day. The options are not what they were. And so we have to think about what the reality is and make a judgment accordingly. And I always talk about Sophie's Choice, where she had to choose between her two children. Either both were going to be killed or she chose that one would live. Now, that's pretty dramatic, but really for some Christians, voting for Donald Trump is something like that. You know that as the opposition research, the layers are peeled back on that, we're going to learn some really things that are going to be very hard to hear. We're going to hear things about Melania and her modeling before she was a mother. We're going to probably see pictures. We're going to have all kinds of things that are going to offend the sensibilities of evangelicals. What perspective can you give, knowing that this is indeed what's going to be happening? His marriages, the women in his life, all of these things which are distasteful to evangelicals. How should people view all of that in the light of this election?
A really good question, Sandy, that I'm going to have to unpack in the weeks ahead. But let me just very briefly state that, first off, I respect everyone's opinion. I may not agree with those who have said, never Trump under no circumstance. I'm just going to stay home. I don't think we should stay home. I don't agree with that. I think we do have to shape the process and the future of our country with what we have to work with. I'm not excited about this. I got involved, as you know, in the primary. I openly endorsed, as an individual, Ted Cruz, and I worked, I campaigned for him. I traveled the country for him because I believed in his message. I know him. I share the same worldview with him. I thought that, and I still believe, that he was what America needs. I don't have that choice anymore. So now I've got to say, all right, what can I do given what I have to work with? And so this is not a, something that I relish, that I am excited about. But from a pragmatic standpoint, I think there's opportunity. And let me just say this about Donald Trump and what I've seen, that he does seem to be open, teachable. Has he made past mistakes? Without question. And I'm not going to try to rationalize those. Has he made choices I disagree with? Absolutely, without question. But how is he going to go forward? That's the whole thing about, I shared today in a press conference about evangelical Christianity. Our view is always looking forward under the grace of God if we acknowledge that we have done wrong. And I'm hoping that, you know, personally and from the standpoint of, you know, even his campaign, that he, walks in that grace that is available, but cast a vision forward for America that evangelicals can rally around. I do not think you can win this election by scaring people with what America would look like under Hillary Clinton. You have got to cast a vision. I think there are those that can come alongside him and help him cast a vision that moves America back to a country that honors God again, and therefore would be a recipient of his blessing.
You know, Tony, I was just reading in Luke. I find myself sitting in the book of Luke these days a little bit, and I was reminded Jesus' disciples were complaining about someone teaching something. I don't remember the context now, who was saying what, but they were not the disciples, and they were complaining. They're not one of us. And his response was, he who is for us is not against us. And so, in other words, I do think that's a principle. If Donald Trump expresses that he wants to protect the religious freedoms of Christians, and he's for us on that level, then I think we should follow Jesus' admonition. He may not be one of us. He may not understand the gospel as fully and thoroughly as we hope and pray that he will at some point in his life and his family and all of them. But I do think that his instincts to protect Christians and religious freedom, he is for us. He's not against us. And I think that's an important principle that Jesus himself laid down.
Well, with one caveat, I would say to that, Sandy, is that I don't think we should just, you know, automatically fall in line like the Pied Piper. And I'm not suggesting you say that, but I want to be very clear to our listeners that I think it's kind of the Ronald Reagan trust to verify. But that's why I think this process that began with this conversation, which, you know, part of it is, who does he pick as his running mate? Is it someone who does have a track record on these issues, a conservative, whom the evangelical community knows?
Did you talk about that today?
That did not come up in that meeting. It was more on the policy side, but that clearly has been communicated in other settings. And the party platform, you know, for most of these voters that are Republican-leaning, they don't all be a part of the Republican Party. But they have there's a clear contrast between the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. You know, the Democratic Party is the one that voted God out of their platform. The Republicans have specifically acknowledged him. They have one of the most conservative platforms currently. What will he do with that? Will he embrace it? Will he try to change it? I think that's going to be one of those things that shows us whether or not this commitment to protecting faith is in fact genuine and is going to be a key part of his administration.
Well, all very interesting. And so tune in to Megyn Kelly tonight, and you'll hear Tony Perkins, the host of this show, Washington Watch, talking about this more fully. And Tony, thanks for making time to let us know, like when it's fresh off the press. I appreciate your time in this busy season.
Sandy, I appreciate your time. Thanks for filling in for me today. As always, great to talk with you.
My pleasure. Thanks, Tony. All right. Well, it has been my pleasure to be your host today for Washington Watch. Oops. Goodbye.
Of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234. 7234.